This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, boys and girls. Here we are on the wake-up call, June 11th. No particular opening for today's program, not because I wasn't being creative or thoughtful, but because I think today's topic deserves the extra few minutes. I do want to take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. With everything you need to get outside this summer, Blue Ridge's area headquarters for camping supplies and also features maps, guides, guided backpacking trips, and now on-water kayak demos. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports can be found in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, and in the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen. And our guest today, one of our guests, our major guest, nothing against Mark here in the studio, but our major guest is from London, so let me toss this bit of information out there. There's a new way to contact WNRN. It's America Online's instant message service. You can IM requests and comments to the screen. Use screen name WNRN Studio. We're almost always watching. Catherine and I are here today. So IM us at WNRN Studio. And we'll see if we can get your question or comment on the air. Don't forget the phone numbers today, 979-0919. And if you're listening from further out, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. All right. Let's get into the topic today. Catherine, we're going to try this now. Dr. DeGray? Damn. All right, try it this way. Dr. DeGray? All right, Catherine, it was working earlier. Okay. All right. Well, we have Dr. Aubrey DeGray, who is from London, a genetics and biogerontology doctor. And again, those challenging phone lines, even more challenging when we're trying to dial an international number. And then we also have Mark Patterson here in the studio. Mark, how are you?
Doing great, Rick.
I want to thank you so much for joining us in the studio, just for the topic at hand, but also an important back to be here for technological differences like this.
All right.
We do always have plan B on this, and whoever's trying to call in at the moment, hang tight. If Scott wants to answer the phone, but I won't promise that you're going to get put on the air now while we work with our guest.
Well, while we're waiting, maybe I could just mention a little bit about Dr. DeGray.
I would love for you to talk about Dr. DeGray and the Methuselah Foundation in general. So fire away and let the listeners know what's in store.
You bet. I think your listeners should recognize what an opportunity this is. We have, for the next hour, on the wake-up call, literally the world's leading expert in the field of life extension. If there's anyone out there who is a boomer, perhaps, and has been giving more thought to how they could live a healthier, younger, more vibrant life and how they could extend their years, I know a lot of people my age, I'm in that group, do think about that. Well, the guest that we will have connected here shortly is literally the world expert on this, and he is set apart from the majority of people in the field in that he is advocating the repair of aging damage. There's a lot of advice out there on nutrition, how to stay fit, how to eat the right foods, and that kind of thing, and that's all very helpful. But Dr. DeGray has really garnered worldwide attention because he is saying, well, that's important, but eventually all that does is delay the inevitable. We all get older and we all die eventually. But Dr. DeGray has proposed that we instead approach the damage of aging, and that by focusing on the damage of aging, that we can actually begin to cure, even reverse aging. So a person who's already in their 50s or 60s has hope that there may be a way in the future to actually reverse aging and to grow younger.
And tell me how and why you're involved in this. I mean, okay, so Dr. DeGray is our expert on the topic, and I heard a big, you know, backfeed in the other room, so I'm assuming we're getting closer to have that set up properly. But why, you know, what's your take on it? You're not a doctor. You're not a scientist.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm just a person that I do have an interest in science. At one point, I was a pre-med student, but I changed, went to business school, and took a different path. But, you know, as I look around and consider how to best spend the remaining years of my life, what's more important than trying to solve the aging problem? People devote a lot of energy, a lot of money to a lot of different causes. But what could be more important? You know, every day, 100,000 people die from age or age-related diseases. And even more sinister than that, 100,000 people every day are approaching an era of their life where there is no functionality, where they are cut off from society largely, where they then have a whole cascade of diseases. And so when I heard of Dr. DeGray's efforts to actually cure aging, to end, even reverse aging, I realized that nothing could be more important. And so I contacted him and volunteered and have joined a group of businessmen and scientists and other volunteers that are all rallying around Dr. DeGray's ideas to try to create a research institute to pursue this kind of research.
All right, Catherine tells me that effort number B is there. Dr. DeGray?
Hello.
Hey, that's what we want to hear. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. Catherine, there's a little bit of feedback, but we'll do our best here. Dr. DeGray, I want to thank you so much for joining us. What time is it in London?
It's about 10 past 4 in the afternoon.
Oh, okay, so 5 hours difference. I can't ever keep up because I'm not that smart and because we have daylight savings time. Curious to start with, Mark's been kind enough to get us started and lay some foundation on the importance of extending life. I'm curious, though, is there a particular goal you're curing aging rather than just slowing it? Is that correct? All right, Catherine, we got to turn that up a little bit. So that is a goal. I'm curious as to why.
Well, it's rather in the same way that it's probably better to cure cancer than just to slow it. You know, it's sort of goes without saying, really, that slowing the progression of something bad is not quite a solution.
And the aspects of age that would be cured are...
Well, basically everything that we don't like about aging. Certainly we would not be slowing down or reversing the accumulation of knowledge and wisdom, for example, but we would be hoping to repair and reverse all of the physiological decline that we have, the accumulation of susceptibility to infections, the progression of intrinsic age-related diseases like cancer and atherosclerosis and diabetes, all of those sorts of things. Basically to restore the composition of the human body in an elderly person to something very similar to how it was when they were a young adult.
And who gets to participate in this?
Well, of course, in principle, the idea is that everybody gets to participate.
And, you know, so the eventual goal was to make it so that no one passes away unless they're hit by a car or...
Of course, we'll still have trucks to get hit by and so on, so there'll be plenty of other causes of death. But what we'll have to eliminate is the increase in the risk of death and the risk of debilitation that occurs as we get older, so that an older person who is aged, I don't know, 100 or even more, would have no greater risk of dying in the next year than someone who's 20 or 30.
You mentioned one of the first questions just a minute or so ago, treating age like you would treat cancer. And we're making effort into getting rid of cancer. And so let's put forth the same effort, if not more, into getting rid of aging.
That's right.
I'd like to know what the general response is to that sort of that theory. Are you looked upon as a smart and to very intelligent scientist and doctor, but possibly the goal is a little bit out there, and we could, you know, I'm just curious as to when you, what sort of feedback you get from the general public.
Well, of course, it's very wide-ranging. There are plenty of people in the general public who are just like Mark, who come across the possibility of this idea and who find out more about it and are curious, and the more they find out, the more they realize that this is actually quite a good idea. Then there are all manner of other reasons that people have for being wary, for being ambivalent about all this, and that's why I spend a lot of my time, both in talks and in interviews and in publications, talking about the social context and the ethical context of this work and explaining why the reasons that people may have for being hesitant about this are
actually... Oh, there we go, Catherine, you were right. You know, we had this problem. There's these funky lines, these funky beeps that go on. Sometimes we do this, and we interviewed David Kirby in New York back in April of 2005. These funky beeps on the line show up and kept dropping him off the air.
Have we lost Aubrey at this point?
We have. Catherine's rushed in there to dial him back because she pointed out to me earlier that, oh, those mysterious lines, those mysterious red lights are back. I hope that doesn't happen.
Let me just jump in while we're waiting for him to get back to answer, to add to his answer. You ask what the response is, and of course, there's the public response. I think by and large, most people would welcome the ability to live longer, but there's also the scientific community's response. Dr. DeGray has hosted several conferences in the last several years involving hundreds of the world's leading scientists, and I know he is respected, extremely well respected and well connected with literally the top scientists all over the globe. Otherwise, these people would not show up to his conferences. But in particular, right now, there's something very interesting going on. At MIT, there's a magazine called Technology Review, and I'm sure many of your viewers are familiar with it. You can also go to the Technology Review website. And right now, and that's just technologyreview.com, right now the lead story is a showdown, if you will. Dr. DeGray has put forth his proposals, and Technology Review has offered $20,000 to any scientist who can suggest why his proposals might not be reasonable. And there are a number of people who have written responses, and that's all posted on the Technology Review website. We don't currently have the results on that. I think they're going to be forthcoming in July. We'll find out what the judges, there's a panel of judges, and again, these are some of the top scientists in the world that are judging the showdown, so it'll be very interesting to see what the result of that is. You know, there are certainly people in the scientific community who say that, yeah, eventually maybe we'll solve aging, but this could be hundreds of years away, if ever. Whereas Dr. DeGray and the scientists that would agree with his perspective is that this is something that should be addressed now, and that there's the possibility of doing something in the near term.
Dr. DeGray, are you back? All right. Catherine? No, gone. Catherine, this time, put him on hold, and we're going to do Plan B. Last time we blamed it on sunspots. I don't know what to blame it on this time, but we do have Plan B, which we'll use now. So Catherine will dial him up. You know, Mark, I'm curious, and I'll toss this question out at Dr. Aubrey DeGray when he returns. Isn't immortality something that one person wishes for themselves, but in thoughts of a more societal term, they're like, I don't know about that. I don't know if I want everybody else to be like that. I don't know if I want everyone else to live forever.
Well, I don't think so. I think my own desire to live as long, and I got to emphasize as healthy as possible. The whole idea here is to be young and to be functional and active. It's not fear of death. I don't have any fear of death any more than anyone else. I just love life. What a great time to be alive today. So much happening. There's so much to learn. There's so much to do. And so I just want to extend that as long as possible. My desire to live longer certainly does not make me want, it's not a selfish thing just me. This is something I would love to have for my family, for my loved ones. Think of the possibilities of developing friendships, new relationships. Think of the world the way it could be if people, when they are at their most wisest point, would not be shut down by disease and death. I mean, you think about the incredible loss to our society. I mean, you're talking society issues. Think what a loss it is when we have people that finally begin to figure out life, and just as they've got it figured out, they leave. So, no, I think extending life is a desirable goal. You use the word immortality. I don't think anyone's realistically talking about immortality. But I think it is a realistic goal that we could extend healthy, youthful life for, maybe 120 years, maybe 150 years, maybe 200 years, and in theory, even further. I mean, the idea is that the longer you can live, the more you'll be around, or the longer you'll be around, during which there will be additional discoveries that might continue to lengthen your life. So ultimately, the only limit would be death by accidents or other things that we don't know about yet.
All right, we are here on the Wake Up Call 91.9 talking about the effort to increase life expectancy. We have Mark Patterson here, a local supporter, and we have Dr. Aubrey DeGray, who should be back on the line now. Doctor?
I'm there, yes. You're yes, quiet yes. Now, but it's working. I can manage.
I wish you could fix technology here in the studio as well as your effort put forth. I was just asking Mark about isn't immortality or let's change that phrase to increased life expectancy something that for the majority of people you look about for yourself, and if you were asked if you could live an extra day or week or long number of years, that most people would say, yes, sure, I'd love to. But when you sort of present that for the rest of society, that most people would say, I don't know about that. Explain the positives to us.
Well, it's pretty obvious when you think about it, really, because the fact is that we don't live to 200 years old or whatever all in one go. We do it one day at a time. And there's a reason why most of us are quite happy with the idea of living an extra week or an extra year, which is that we're in good health, we can do, we can do what we want with our lives, and we prefer to have that chance rather than die instead. Now, if we carry on a year later from now being still as youthful and vibrant and capable and functional as we are today, then we're probably going to make the same decision. And the same will apply year after year after year if we don't undergo this functional decline that we do at the moment and susceptibility to disease and so on. So, really, it's just a matter of thinking long-term about how you would feel if you didn't get old and decrepit. And people's fears about this tend to be because they, in some sense, deliberately try not to think about the positives of all this. And that sort of makes sense if you think about it, because at the moment, of course, we can't do anything about aging. And certainly we've been imagining the defeat of aging as a sort of holy grail for thousands and thousands of years. But of course, if it is unavailable, we have to find some way of putting it out of our minds so that we can get on with our lives and not be preoccupied by it. And so it makes sense to come up with, perhaps quite irrational reasons why actually aging is good for us, and especially aging of other people might be good for us. But now, that's a big part of the problem, because, I think that we are in striking distance of actually doing something serious about aging, and it's important that people realize the benefits and have a sense of proportion about the potential problems that it might cause, and realize that those problems are insignificant compared to the suffering that would be alleviated and the lives that would be saved.
Don't forget you can call us up and ask questions, 979-0919, 1-877-967-6762. I promise that that phone will work. And if you want to use the new WNRN instant message on AOL, you can send your IM requests with screen name WNRN Studio. Catherine's here with me to help pass people out. While we wait for that first phone call, mostly cloudy, chance of 30% showers today. Highs 75 to 80, cloudy with chance of showers tonight. Lows 50 to 55, mostly cloudy with a chance of 50% showers tomorrow. Highs 65 to 70. Right now it's cloudy and 64 in the valley, 65 in Lynchburg, 70 in Richmond, and 66 here in Charlottesville. I do want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today as well. Blue Ridge Graphics, Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And in case I forgot to mention, which I think I did, that's the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast. All right, we got a call coming in. Mark, comment?
Yeah, I just think your listeners should know that this is not something that is abstract. If you are interested in extending your life or the life of your loved ones, there really is something that you can do about it. There's a website that is called mprize.org, and that's spelled M-P-R-I-Z-E, just like it sounds, .org, mprize.org. And this is an effort that was founded by Dr. DeGray and David Goebel, and is a prize that rewards scientists who are able to figure out ways to extend the lifespan of mice, and the hope is that when we do that, then we'll learn some things that will help us extend human lifespan. But that's within everyone's reach, and we have people that contribute small amounts and larger amounts. Currently, that prize is at $3.5 million and is one of the most significant medical prizes of its kind in the world. So it's all very exciting.
All right, Dr. DeGray, hang on 1 second. I'm going to take our first call. We got Paul. Paul, be quick.
Okay. Doctor, if we're going to extend life and do something about disease, it seems to me that paying attention to the quality of the water you drink is one of the most critical things. The cell ages because of dehydration, as I understand it, and it opens a doorway. So drinking the tap water almost anywhere in the world is really dangerous to your health. So I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
And thanks for getting the call started, Paul.
There are many, many aspects of what we eat and drink that could be improved and perhaps should be improved in order to protect ourselves from a wide variety of different life-threatening problems, whether it be infections or other ones. And there are two things I want to say about that in the context of the prospect of defeating aging. The first one is that we will actually, be very likely to pay more attention to these dangers when we know that they may have a much bigger effect than they would have now. It could be that now drinking or eating the wrong way would take a year or two off your life, and if that turns into taking a century or two off your life, then people may care about it a little bit more. And, of course, that doesn't only apply to what we eat and drink. It applies to all manner of the way in which we take care of our environment and how we treat the world. So that's an important point. Another thing, however, which is specifically to do with health concerns, is something that really ought to be mentioned. Because the therapies that I'm focusing on and that I think are likely to be developed will be genuinely repair and rejuvenation therapies, as opposed to simply things that slow down the accumulation of age-related damage at the microscopic level. Because of that, it means that we're actually going to be able to get away with treating ourselves a little bit less well than we can get away with now. For example, at the moment, obviously, it's rather a bad idea to have too high fat a diet, because we'll put on weight and we may have effects on the progression of diabetes and other diseases like that, it may be that the therapies that come along to give us the chance to live longer in this way will actually allow us to live longer even if we do, for example, have a high-fat diet. This is rather similar, I think, to the situation with infectious diseases where, for example, a century ago it was quite a bad idea to go to Africa if you wanted to live a long time because you were in serious danger of catching malaria and dying rather soon. Whereas now, if you take an injection before you go, then you're more or less entirely protected from malaria, so going to Africa is no longer a life-threatening decision. It's rather similar, I think.
979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS or WNRN Studio, if you want to IM us. Doctor, I'm sure you get this all the time. What about overpopulation? No one passes away, or they pass away at a much slower rate while the birth rate stays the same. No, don't we have to worry about that as the world in general?
Oh, yes, we certainly have to worry about it. But we have to have a sense of proportion about it, too. It's certainly true that over the long term, we have to make sure, over the really long term, that the birth rate is no greater and no less than the death rate in the world as a whole, in order that we don't get an overpopulation problem. And that's, of course, why it's rather good news that the birth rate is falling so rapidly in so many places in the world, even in the most populous countries like China and India. But there's ample reason to be concerned that if we were to eliminate so much of the death rate as we could if we essentially eliminated aging, then the effect on the birth rate would have to be very dramatic in order to compensate for that. Now, the good news is that we would have time to get used to it because population changes only really rather slowly. And so, in fact, even though quite a lot of the problems we would face in a post-aging world would be ones that would come on us suddenly, this one would not come on us suddenly, and we could adjust accordingly. Another thing to point out is this is all about choice. These therapies are not going to be forced on anybody. So it may very well be that in a world in which we have these therapies available to whomever wants them, that some sectors of society decide that, we'll use these therapies because we don't fancy the suffering involved in aging and we don't fancy the death either, and we'll live with the fact that we can't have as many children as we used to be able to have. Where other sectors of society may take the opposite decision. They may decide that it's really important to have a lot of children around, and therefore they'll actually put up with aging the way we always have and not use these therapies. This is a choice that society is entitled to make in the future, and it may be that the whole world does the same thing, or it may not be, in the same way that, for example, the Amish today in America don't take advantage of large ranges of modern technology. This is something that they're entitled to do. We don't resent them for doing it. They don't resent us. But what we would resent would be if we were in the future at a time when our ancestors could have developed anti-aging therapies that really worked, and they didn't do so because they were worried about overpopulation. In other words, if they tried to make our choice for us. So I feel that we have a duty to the future, to humanity of the future, to develop these therapies as soon as possible so as to give humanity of the future the choice whether to use these therapies and put up with having to have fewer kids or whether not to use them.
We are talking about the efforts to control aging, reduce it, stop it, all sorts of methods here with Dr. Aubrey de Grey, specialist in genetics and biogerontology, and Mark Patterson, a local supporter here in the studio. Thank goodness, as we had some earlier phone troubles. Phone line is open, 979-0919. I know somebody was on the line, David from Palmyra, but David didn't have the patience to wait. I'm not going to interrupt the guest on the studio. So sometimes you have to hang tight on the phone for a little bit. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Call us up. Not everybody's going to get the chance to talk to Dr. de Grey, who was on 60 Minutes, I believe, at the start of the year.
That's right. He was featured on a 60-minute segment and actually has been featured in lead stories in magazines and television interviews around the world. I want to mention that we've got a two-prong approach. When I say we, I'm referring to a group of volunteers, and I hope that there are those in the listening audience today that decide that, yeah, I want to join that group of volunteers because we would welcome your support. We have a two-pronged approach. One approach is called the mprize.org, M-P-R-I-Z.org, and that's a prize that rewards scientists for extending the lifespan of mice, and then we'll learn how to do that for people, hopefully, from that effort. The second effort is direct research on some of the critical issues that could reverse the damage of aging. And Dr. DeGray is heading up that effort, and we currently have a fledgling amount of funds available to that effort, but we hope that will increase rapidly in the future. If there's anyone that's listening today that has been blessed with some resources, I cannot imagine anything that would be more important. What's going to be more important? Helping Katrina victims? We had, 1,000 or 1,200 or so people die there. Every single day, 100,000 people die because of aging, and they have a lot of suffering before they get there. Solving the aging problem would solve some of the most critical problems facing society. We've got this huge $1 trillion deficit facing us in the Social Security realm. Well, what if we didn't need Social Security? What if we didn't have to worry about taking care of the elderly and
sick? I don't
know
if I want to work that long because I've lived
in the... Fine, then vacation. Then vacation.
120.
Fine.
All right, let me do this real quick. I want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for their support for today's program. Very interesting show. Five Guys is Seville Reader's Choice for burgers and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. Five Guys Burgers is behind the fountain in the Berkshire Shopping Center, now open in the Hollymead Town Center, and on the downtown mall, Charlottesville. Dial them up at 975 Guys. All right, we got a call coming. Dr. DeGray, hang on.
Yeah.
Catherine, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Question, comment? Be quick.
I guess what you're really addressing is the disease and other factors related to aging. So what you're really talking about, I think, must be quality of life as you're... as you age, and therefore it would prolong life. Is that correct?
I can't have both of you on the air at the same time real quick. So that was plan section B of our needs. Is that the end of your question?
I'm curious about whether he's really talking about alleviating death, which it sounds like, or he's actually talking about just improving the quality of life so that our lives are longer, and how that relates to environmental factors. For instance, would it not help to alleviate age-related diseases if the environment were cleaned up and that type thing?
All right. Now, that's a great question. Thanks. Keep listening. All right, Doctor, you're back.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that question. And yes, certainly what I'm about is postponing the onset of age-related diseases and decrepitude and debilitation. Now, the thing is that means that we will live longer. There is no sort of, you know, hidden time bomb in our bodies that makes us die independently of the age-related debilitation and disease that we suffer towards the end of life. So if we add 10 years to healthy life, we will also add 10 years to total life. We will postpone the frail period at the end of life. And if we add 100 years, then we'll add 100 years to total life. So the period at the end of life that is frail and debilitated will be the same as ever. Except that there's a complication there, because if we do this really effectively, then what we will be doing is actually pushing this period of frailty out into the future faster than time is passing. In other words, we'll never get there. Will essentially be solving the problems of aging faster than they accumulate to the point of being bad for us. And I've actually given a name to this concept. I call it life extension escape velocity. It sounds a little bit curious when you first hear it, but if you look at what we would actually need to do in terms of the rate at which we would improve our biomedical technology in order to achieve this, then it's very plausible. There's no reason why this shouldn't happen. And that's actually an integral part of my whole proposal for how to defeat aging. The law of environment, well, this actually brings us back to the previous questioner. Yes, as I said before, the the environmental toxins and so on can certainly contribute to age-related decline and indeed, of course, to illness of younger people. And the more we do about that, the better. And I feel that when we have the opportunity to live a great deal longer, there's a good chance that we may actually place a higher value on life in all manner of ways, and certainly on the risks given by environmental toxins, as one example.
All right, we got another call. Star from Lynchburg, hey, Star.
Hello, hey. I have a question. What does Dr. DeGray, what does he feel is, how does he go about fighting programmed cell death, which I believe is called apoptosis, and what is the research that actually is being done in clinical trials now?
Keep listening.
Okay, thank you.
All right, doctor, you're back on.
Okay, so the first part of the question about programmed cell death, which as the questioner correctly states, is normally known in technical terms as apoptosis. Now, the word programmed rather gives it away. The fact is that we have genes that actually cause cell death by apoptosis, and the reason we have those genes is because they're useful. It turns out that apoptosis is good for us. Apoptosis is not something that we want to stop happening. It happens when it is better for the organism that the cell should die than that it should persist. And so the things we want to fix, there are many, many and varied types, but reducing apoptosis is certainly not one of them. In terms of clinical trials, yes. Okay, so I normally describe the range of things that we need to fix in aging by classifying them into seven different categories. And some of those categories are still a long way from clinical trials. That's why we will take at least 10 years, I think, to get these therapies working even in the laboratory in mice. And perhaps, I normally say that it's about 25 years that we have a 50-50 chance of getting them working in humans at the clinical trial level, if the funding is good enough and so on. And it could be that much longer because anything that's that far out, the timescales are, of course, very speculative. But some of the parts of the plan are actually in clinical trials already. One important part is the elimination of indigestible molecules that accumulate in the spaces between our cells. The best known example of this is in Alzheimer's disease. There's something called amyloid beta, a protein which accumulates into big clumps called senile plaques. And these plaques are thought by a lot of people to be important in the progression of dementia. And we'd like to get rid of them. And people have figured out how to do this. So about 7 or 8 years ago, this was demonstrated in terms of proof of concept in mice, and it moved to clinical trials really rather fast, and clinical trials are ongoing right now. There are other aspects of Alzheimer's disease, I should point out, which may or may not be alleviated by removing this plaque material. So we're still some way from a real cure for Alzheimer's, but it's great progress. And there are a couple of other examples. Stem cells, for example, when cells die and they are not naturally replaced, then, of course, the number of cells in the tissue in question declines with time, and sometimes that's really bad for us. Parkinson's disease is an example of this, where a particular part of the brain called the substantia nigra loses neurons and they're not replaced. And people have been figuring out how to use stem cells to replace those neurons. That's a clinical trial as well. There are a couple of other examples I could give.
All right, you are listening to Dr. Aubrey DeGray as we talk about the efforts put into controlling aging, reducing aging, slowing aging down. Feel free to dial us up, 1139 here in the wake-up call, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, with gardening time kicking into high gear, The Hook looks at the floral interlopers. Coach Dom Starsha of the university's championship lacrosse team takes the interview hot seat, and The Hook provides some different interviews on the recent underage drinking incidents. The Hook, all those little red boxes around town full of free papers. And additional support also coming from 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix, .com. All right, Dr. DeGray is with us. Feel free to dial us up and play along. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free number. And somewhere, which I have yet to memorize, WNRN Studio is the AOL instant message. That's right. IMS today at our screen name, WNRN Studio. We have Mark Patterson here as well, a local supporter of the Methuselah Foundation. And what was the other one, the M?
Well, the Methuselah Foundation is the umbrella organization over that is founded a prize known as the mprize.org. And some of your listeners may have heard of the X Prize. Prizes throughout history have been very, very successful in bringing about scientific innovation. The X Prize recently encouraged private spaceship development, private space travel. Well, the mPrize, mprize.org, is encouraging scientific research for extending lifespan. And then the second prong of the Methuselah Foundation is to directly coordinate and sponsor research. And so, you know, there's a great analogy. During World War II, the whole world was faced with a crisis of World War II. And a group of scientists came together. I mean, the government realized what a critical problem this was. A group of scientists came together in a project known as the Manhattan Project. And some of the brightest minds around the world all came together in that moment to develop a fantastic weapon of destruction and a fantastic way to end life. Well, at the Methuselah Foundation, we would like to start a Manhattan Project to extend life, to prevent aging and age-related disease and all the suffering that goes with it. And such an effort has already started. The mPrize is part of it, but we've already started raising funds for direct scientific research and coordinating the research of other laboratories around the world. So again, if any of your listeners would like to be a part of this effort, just go to mprize.org, and we welcome your volunteerism. We welcome your financial support. If we can bring about a Manhattan Project to solve this problem of aging, then your listeners who are my age, I'm 50, the baby boomer age, have a real possibility that they might be able to significantly extend their own lives and the lives of their loved ones.
Dr. DeGray, and again, Dr. Aubrey DeGray is a specialist in genetics and biogerontology. I'm curious if you have gotten any positive or negative assistance, feedback from the pharmaceutical companies, because it seems to me that, however you want to look at it, pharmaceutical companies make an awful lot of profit. They are in existence. One of the major things that makes them everyday money is our drugs on the aging process.
Mm-hmm.
So are they actually supporting money towards the Methuselah Foundation, or are they, you know, saying that the people involved are wasting their time or crackpots, or what's the sort of relationship you have with them?
Well, there are two aspects to that. The first thing is that pharmaceutical companies in general are interested in therapies, medicines and so on that will be available really rather soon, perhaps in the next 10 years. They don't really tend to spend much time working on things that might be 25 or more years away. And so perhaps they're not really on their radar most of the time. However, another very important thing is with regard to the point you raise about the importance of frail and debilitated people for the profits of pharmaceutical companies. And that would certainly be a big problem, a big reason to oppose me, if it were the case that the therapies I'm working towards would be ones that would simply eliminate aging. You'd take them once, and that would be that. You would never age again. The thing is that these therapies are not going to be like that. And indeed, therapies like that are, I think, absolutely impossible. These therapies are going to be very much like the sorts of therapies you have for your car or your house, the things that you do regularly to maintain it, which if you do them thoroughly enough can maintain it indefinitely. They are things that you do have to do, you know, every so often. And therefore, from a pharmaceutical company's point of view, these therapies would be no different than the sorts of things that elderly people have to take. In fact, arguably, they could be, they may actually be more lucrative for pharmaceutical companies, firstly because they'll be rather elaborate and laborious therapies, certainly at first, and therefore rather expensive. And secondly, because as time goes on, a higher and higher proportion of the population will be ending up taking them and using them, namely everyone who's old enough to need them.
Well, how do you prevent only the wealthy from being those who can live to be 120 or 150 or...
Yeah, that's a really important question, which comes up a great deal, very rightly so. The thing is that we have to ask how these therapies will actually arrive and the social context in which they will arrive. And here it's extremely useful to bear in mind that there will be a period of at least a decade, probably longer, during which everybody knows that these therapies are coming. Everybody appreciates that it's only a matter of time. We haven't got to that point yet, but when we have sufficiently impressive results in the laboratory to prove the concept that this is possible, then people will know that translating that technology from, let's say, mice into humans will happen eventually. And that is actually going to be the trigger that causes most of the upheavals and changes of priorities and attitudes and behavior that a post-aging world will motivate. It won't actually wait until the therapies arrive. It will happen when the therapies become widely anticipated. Now, the business of paying for these therapies actually plays an enormous role at this point, because if you're a normal taxpaying voter in the USA or anywhere else in the developed world, then you're simply not going to vote for people who are willing to put up with aging anymore. It's going to be impossible to get elected except on a manifesto commitment to have a sort of Apollo project to defeat aging as soon as possible. And that means that it's going to be a bit like wartime. People are going to have, I think, really a wartime mentality where they're willing to put up with a bit of temporary diminution of standards of living simply in order to end the slaughter as soon as possible once they realize that aging does actually kill 100,000 people a day, and that's just the same as anything else killing 100,000 people a day, especially since it kills us so horribly. So people are going to vote for whatever tax rises may be needed to get this research done. But here's the important part that answers your question. They're also going to vote for whatever tax rises may be needed to fund the training of the staggering numbers of medical personnel and the manufacturing of consumables and so on, so that these things will be available to them, the voter, not just to Bill Gates or other billionaires, when they arrive. In other words, all of the really hard economic and political decisions that need to be made in order to get this stuff widely available across the world will actually be made in advance, will actually be made before the therapies arrive. And that's why I'm not terribly worried about the problem you described.
All right, it is 11:49 here in the wake-up call. Just 10 or 11 minutes left if you want to ask a question for... I mean, granted, one of the greatest scientists in the world and most well-known on the topic, genetics, biogerontology, the reduction of aging, the extension of life, Dr. Aubrey de Grey here on the phone with us live from London. We have Mark Patterson in the studio, a supporter, is here to tell everyone why he personally is involved and interested in the baby boomer guest here with us. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free line. We got a little bit of time left, so dial us up. Catherine will patch you through. I want to ask both of you, Mark and Dr. de Grey, is there any sort of religious aspect, negative feedback? When I was talking to some friends about the show, and one of the immediate comments I got from a friend who attends church on a regular basis was, is this all about putting death off, postponing death, which is not supposed to be such a bad thing? I mean, granted, I believe that regardless of your religion, your God wants you to live a positive and creative and helpful life. But when that time is up, you are supposed to go to a place that is just as happy, just as positive, just as creative, and there's no need to do things to put that off. You're not supposed to speed your way towards it, but you're not supposed to do things to postpone it. So I'm curious as to if you've gotten any religious aspects.
Well, I'll just speak from a Christian perspective. You know, if you read the Bible, if you see the example set by Christ, he was always encouraging people to help those around them, feed the hungry, help the sick. I mean, that was what he encouraged people to do. And I cannot imagine any religious person in any religion that was founded on the basis of caring about other people, which I hope is at the root of all religions, not being interested in stopping the suffering of disease. You know, God wants us to use the faculties, our intelligence, and the other gifts that he's given us. He wants us to use those to the maximum possible advantage that we can. No religious person would suggest that we should stop using antibiotics or that we should, in any way backtrack from the discoveries that have helped all of us so much. And I think ending the suffering of aging and age-related diseases is something that is comfortably within any religious point of view.
Dr. DeGray?
Yes, I mean, I would simply, I would start by reinforcing what Mark says, and I think what he says applies not simply to Christianity, but to certainly all the major religions that I'm aware of, that, you know, suffering is considered to be quite a bad idea, and alleviation of suffering is something that that we have a duty to work towards. And that's also to do with postponing death. I mean, it's not a sin to go to the hospital when you're sick. In fact, it may be a sin not to go to the hospital when you're sick. And if the hospital can do more for you 20 years from now than it can now to keep you healthy and vibrant and functional, even though you may be a lot older, then I don't think that logic changes. I think also we can look at it in terms of the ability to do good. Insofar as we were put here by God to do good, to do his work, then the longer we can do it, the more good we can do. So really, I don't think there's any difficulty there. Another way of putting it is to remember that we are only talking about eliminating one cause of death. It happens to be the cause that accounts for two-thirds of the people worldwide, and a lot more than two-thirds in the developed world. But it's still only one cause of death. And I think it's fair to say that if you die of aging at age 80 or you die of, you know, being hit by a truck at age 800, then it's all the same to God, really. So it's not as if we're in any way, usurping God's will or anything like that.
Oh, no, that's a classic line. And I would like to remind people after that if you weren't here for the whole program or you're on your way out to lunch, www.seavillepodcast.com. You can hear the whole hour, which unfortunately also includes some early phone troubles. www.seavillepodcast.com, and you can re-listen to all this.
I'd like to encourage listeners. We need your help. We need, as a society, to make some decisions. Dr. DeGray has outlined a plan that can help us in the laboratory to learn how to extend the lifespan of mice, perhaps even cure and reverse the age of mice, and then take from that to helping people to extend their lives. And when you ask him how much money we're talking about, he suggests, well, it may be on the order of about $1 billion. Well, $1 billion is a lot of money. But when you consider the tens of billions of dollars that we spend on this crisis or that crisis, the hundreds of billions of dollars we have spent trying to help the people in Iraq, I think we as a society need to say, look, here is the most important problem facing the world. People are 100,000 people every day. You know, your program, Rick, is called Wake Up Call. Well, let's wake up 100,000 people every day are dying and are and have gone through a terrible process to get there, because aging and the suffering that comes through those diseases is a terrible way to go. And yet, for so little money, relatively, we as a society, if we make the right choices, could rapidly move this along. That's why I refer to it as a Manhattan Project. So if you're listening and you're saying, well, I don't have $1 billion, go to mprize.org and contribute $10, contribute $5, tell your friends. If you've been blessed with even more resources, then contact Dr. Aubrey de Grey. His contact information is at mprize.org. That's mprize.org. Contact Dr. de Grey and offer to help him, because we are actively now working with some of the wealthiest businessmen in the world to bring together the funding that will create a Manhattan Project to end and even reverse human aging.
I do want to thank everyone for listening today. WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. We do have a few minutes left. And, of course, you'll stay tuned at noon and join George Bell for Les Temps Perdue. The best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Mariah Carey. No Asia. No REO Speedwagon. Dude, that is the 80s. But you will hear Talking Heads, Replacements, and Lush. And requests are always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. Only on WNRN. All right, Dr. de Grey, just a few more moments with you. We mentioned early on about the fact that there are two prongs towards the research, correct?
You mean the prize and the directed research, perhaps?
Yes.
Right.
I'm curious, the prize itself, I mean, do you just win it because you get someone to live to be 150? I mean, I know that that's not really it's not that easy, but I'm curious. We've mentioned several times about M-Prize, et cetera, but how do you determine a winner?
Okay, great question. The point of the Matthias Lamas Prize is to work on mice, not on humans. And the reason we want to do that is because we feel that progress in extending mouse lifespan will be a great deal easier than progress in extending human lifespan, and also, yet it will actually tell us a great deal about how to extend human lifespan. So it will be a nice stepping stone to doing the real job on humans. Now, in terms of the way the prize works, it's basically there to provide a stimulus for people to follow their hunches, just like any prize, to try whatever they'd like to do. But, of course, we'd like it to be enduring. We'd like it to carry on doing that, even if somebody wins. So the way we structured it is that there's a world record at the moment for how long a mouse has ever lived, and you've got to beat that record. And when you beat it, you don't get the whole prize fund. What you get is a proportion of the prize fund that depends on how much you beat the previous record by. So if you beat it only by a small amount, then you only get a small proportion of the fund, and so on. And actually, we have two prizes. One that's just for the single mouse that has lived longer than ever before, and another one for a published scientific study that showed reproducibility, dealing for lots of mice at the same time, things like that. And also, that second prize is focused on therapies that are only initiated when the mouse is already in the second half of its lifespan. So it's more focused on rejuvenation therapies, which, as I say, are the ones that I think show the most promise. So you get the idea.
All right. Dr. de Grey, I want to thank you so much for joining us and tolerating the early issues. I've found it to be quite entertaining and interesting hour. Mark, thank you for coming in and being here to help support us as well. Next week, boys and girls, we're still looking. I have a show idea that I want to do. I want to do one on I need someone to email me, teacher, a parent, some students. I'd like to talk about the school policies and some of the underage drinking problems that have been happening here in town. And bring that out to some of the school board members. www.sevillepodcast.com to listen. You want to email me, abstractme@aol.com. And don't forget, you can IM George in the studio like the Village School for Girls are doing right now. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of @WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at WNRN.RLC.net. The Wake Up Call is produced by Katherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.